Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of F This Movie, the podcast that lives its life a quarter mile at a time. My name is Patrick Bromley. I'm joined once again by my best friend, Doug.
Hey, Hi, Doug. How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I'm good. That was kind of a deep cut, your first joke. The podcast that lives its life a quarter mile at a time.
I don't feel like it was, because if you are the kind of person who wants to hear a podcast about Fast Five, the movie we're talking about right tonight, I said.
I know.
You probably will get that reference. How could you not?
I think
you should be ashamed of yourself if you don't.
If you're listening to it and you're just like, I haven't seen Fast Five, it's like, A, why are you listening to it? But B, we're so timely and so relevant. We are so the podcast of tomorrow, I think.
I think it would have been like way more obscure if I would have been like, welcome to F This Movie, the podcast, the things I'm going to do for my country. Because that's like a triple X joke. And that's, it's way out there. But Xander something.
But it has to be like the sequel to Triple X, not like what had previously been
Triple X State of the Union. Is that what you're referring to?
Well,
with Ice Cube, where he's like, we got a problem here. Boys in the Hood, directed by John Singleton. Guess what else he directed? Too Fast, Too Furious.
Too Furious. Wow.
What you gonna do? Act the fool. Listen, you're listening to F This Movie.
Yes. No, listen, seriously. What are you doing? Pay attention to us.
Let me tell you what's going on in F This Movie. Crazy stuff. If you go to fthismovie.blogspot.com, not only will you find close to 60 podcasts on past shows and such, but you will find lists and things about directors, and you'll find many, many entries in the Watch and Trailers with Doug.
Oh yeah,
column.
They're all really good and well.
They are. What's on the most recent installment?
Harry Potter.
Ooh,
the Harry Potter cast.
Yes,
the Deathly Hallows Part Two.
Part Two. We're gonna F that when that comes out, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we did the first installment of that.
We did. You guys should listen to it if you haven't.
And the second one was What's Your Number, starring Anna Faris and Chris Evans and Joel McHale and et cetera. It is fine.
And Thomas Lennon is in that, and he remembers her vagina.
Oh, that's right. What a great little bit they put in the trailer that I'm sure that's the whole scene. So why would I need to see the movie now? And then Transformers Dark of the Moon.
What?
Which apparently they blow up Chicago. And you actually pointed out something after I'd done my write-up. And I was going to, if you had said it beforehand, I was going to include it in my write-up and pass it off as my own thought.
Yeah.
But now I'm letting the cat out of the bag.
Okay.
And you actually made a great comment about the Transformers trailer is that they blow up a lot of Chicago. And in one sequence, they blow up what looks like two tall buildings, which it doesn't look like those buildings are in Chicago. I know Chicago's downtown fairly well. And it's like these two.
Probably like probably like Sears Tower and the Hancock.
But they blow these buildings up, and it's like, I guess that's the statute of limitations on 9/11.
It's the one that's like totally tipping out, just like, wow, that looks a lot like the world.
But even, any of the, just like, we're blowing up buildings. It's like, well, I guess it's been 11 or 10 years. So almost 10. What year is it?
It'll be 10 years in September. And listen, if Decepticons can't destroy buildings, the terrorists win. So
I think Michael Bay is righting the wrong that Zoolander perpetuated on
by digitally erasing the World Trade Center.
Yeah, like my eyes will never forgive Blue Steel in the book.
Zoolander
jokes.
Zoolander made it safe to laugh again. We're going back 10 years to 9/11, everyone. Welcome to F This Movie. Anyway, what I was getting to was also at F This Movie now is it's a recap of the Roger Ebert Film Festival that just took place in Champaign, Illinois. Roger Ebert does a film festival every year where he shows kind of his overlooked movies. And our own JB was there for the whole festival.
It's called Ebert Fest, by the way. You got to include that Ebert Fest.
Yeah. And he was there and he wrote about it every day. So you can go and read all about what it was like to be at Ebert Fest.
It's called, what's that feature called? Because
it's called Like You Were There.
Like You Were There, because Patrick had previously done that. There was a film festival kind of at the Portage about, what was it, horror movies or?
Yeah, it was like a full moon horror, whatever. It doesn't matter. But just go to fthismovie.blogspot.com and read everything.
Check it out.
Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie.
Oh, yeah. I was even blowing up that Twitter feed this weekend, too. Yeah. I saw because JB is relentless in reporting. I get that it's a day to day, like what's happening, but it's like, oh, man, it's the weekend. Cut me some slack, Jack, is what I'm saying.
You can go to our Facebook page and follow us on Facebook or like us on Facebook or whatever, facebook.com/fthismovie.
Right.
And you can do posts on there and you can poke us and you can say, hey, you guys should, F this movie, you know, and then you can tell us a movie and maybe we'll do it, but you know, I can't promise anything. Listen, we're very busy. Fast Five came out. Okay. And you can
I cleared my calendar for weeks for this weekend just to see Fast Five because I saw five times.
That was
the requirement, I think.
That's like a Fast 25. You can email us always at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. I was genuinely excited about Fast Five. I'm not proud of this fact.
You're jumping right into Fast Five?
No. I mean, just saying because you had said that you had cleared your calendar. I almost kind of did. Like, I was genuinely excited about this movie. And I'm not even necessarily a huge...
not really, because I was like, let's go see it Friday together. And you're like, I have to babysit my kid. I gotta do some adult stuff. And I'm like, I'll see you in theater, fool. That's all what happened. This is all very true.
We'll get back to Fast Five. Doug, have you seen anything good lately?
If by good you mean anything royal, then I've seen lots of royal things.
Tenenbaums?
No. In fact, I do want to see that, though, because
Royal
if
Rumble?
Anything.
Ready to Rumble?
Ready to Rumble.
You saw Ready to Rumble?
In all seriousness, I watched way too much of the, like, anytime, like, because you can't avoid.
I avoided
on
it.
Friday.
I avoided the shit out of it. I didn't see 2 seconds of that thing.
Well, you know, your heart is empty and your ice water in your veins. Because I love. I really appreciate and cherish a good story. It's nice to turn the TV on and not hear about this tsunami. It's like, I get it. Some stuff happened in Japan. It's like, let's focus on the more important stuff. Like
a tsunami of romance.
Yes. Thank you.
No problem.
Washing hate out to sea. Washing.
For the record, I don't know how long we've been talking, but we've done a whole 9/11 thing and now tsunamis. So we're a terrific podcast that everyone should listen to.
The podcast is definitely not going to hell.
Find us in the iTunes store at F This Movie. Don't confuse us with F This Podcast, the piggybackers who
definitely said, there's already an F This Movie.
I'll even include the exclamation point.
Jesus Christ. I mean, not like we're totally taking credit for other people's ideas, but come on. There's a couple of people out there, and you know who you are, you assholes.
That,
like,
Christopher Walken.
You definitely see brilliance, some shining moments of truth, beacons. What? And you're like, I'm going to crib that shit because why not? F This Movie is unique. And I think we're the first persons to ever do a podcast. Let's be honest.
Yeah. We are inventing podcasting at the same time that we are redefining the internet.
That's
also right. Also, movies.
Movies. Yes. But yeah, those a-holes, don't listen to them. Listen to us. Listen to us is what I want to say. I did see, but here's what happened the other night, though. I was flipping through the channels and Shadi was like, oh, leave this on. It was like a BBC broadcast rebroadcast. I'm like, okay. And then she gets bored with it and goes to bed. And I'm like, Patrick.
What's up?
Patrick.
What? Nope. I'm up.
No? Okay. Okay. So I also saw All the President's Men.
Ooh.
And that was very good. I never saw that before because I'm, 12 and there's only so many movies I can see and four of them are prom. So I saw All the President's Men, which is very good. I saw Your Highness, which I did not like.
No.
I saw Hannah, which I did like more than Your Highness. I saw what else?
When you say Your Highness, you mean me, right?
I meant the royal wedding, actually.
Oh, all right.
Last night.
I thought you liked it more than me, Your Highness.
Prince Patrick. I also saw Bad Lieutenant Port of Call, which I liked way more than I should have.
Yeah, right?
I was just like,
this crazy.
Yeah, right? And I'm just like, and Shadi's like, I hate this. And I'm like, I think I love
it. How could she hate that? I don't understand.
because she was in and out, and in her defense, not like she needs defending, but because it's not a movie that you could definitely, you could go either way on for sure. But she was in and out, and like not as just absorbed. And I just was like, yes, everything about this works for me.
See, and that movie for me had like a crazy ability to course correct. I think I saw that movie the day I was told that like I have type 1 diabetes, so my mind was elsewhere.
Wow, but hold on, time out. What? This is a this movie revelation.
It is. I've seen Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. I've never admitted to that before.
And host and the brains behind this operation that we call F this movie has
But not, I'm not the pancreas behind this operation at all. I leave that to you.
Oh, me?
Anyway, so my mind was elsewhere, but that movie has an amazing ability to like course correct, because obviously I was enjoying it just for the crazy Nicolas Cage. But there were times where I was like, oh, this is going off the rails, or this is almost becoming like boring, which is one thing that movie shouldn't be. But then at the end, and I won't give away what the ending was, but I kept waiting for like the other shoe to drop, sort of like, this can't be what's happening, but it totally is. And I thought that was so great. I was like, you're kidding. They're actually doing this. And I was very impressed by that.
It's definitely just a batshit crazy. And I remember you talking about it, you know, like you should definitely see it. You weren't really even telling me like what you thought about it, kind of trying not to, you know, paint my opinion of it before I saw it. But I saw it and I was just kind of like, I was kind of swept away, and all of a sudden I'm just like, what am I watching? Nothing, like things like this aren't really made. And if they are, they're almost too, it's like snakes. Well, not, it's just, it's too far out there almost. Right, and this is just like, still tries to ground itself in some sort of world that's like, I don't know. It was very bizarre. But I saw, I saw a bunch of stuff. I saw, I saw Source Code with you.
This is,
we're going back. I haven't seen
it's been a while. Yeah. Cause you haven't been on since, Sucker Punch, right? That actually wasn't that long ago, but,
It's a long time ago in movie time.
Yeah, but you've seen a lot since then.
I try to.
Now that you've seen All the President's Men, are you going to go back and watch Dick?
I should, right?
To see Bruce McCullough and Will Ferrell play those two cats. I don't know.
You've seen that movie a couple times, right? I have not seen that movie since the theater. The weekend it opened. But yeah, I remember liking it. What have you seen? Anything good lately?
Honestly, I haven't. I haven't really seen anything new. I've been rewatching a lot of stuff, mostly the four previous Fast and Furious movies in preparation of Fast Five. But I also rewatched Running Scared, the Billy Crystal, Gregory Hines buddy comedy from 1986.
Why not?
I love that movie. And if I have an opportunity to tell people to see it, they should. It was shot in Chicago. There's a lot of awesome Chicago, like real Chicago. It's great. I mean, it's not, it's like very, very 80s.
Yeah.
And very much like a buddy cop movie where they're constantly joking. It doesn't matter if they're being shot at or whatever. They're always joking. Billy Crystal is always wearing like some sort of Cubs paraphernalia.
He and Belkibar Takamusa are coming out of the subway to go to run to the Chicago theater.
But it's like, it's not Canada, Chicago. It's real Chicago. And there's a whole car chase that takes place like on the L tracks. And
doesn't Billy Crystal have sex with Demi Moore in a bathtub too? Oh, that's Rob Lowe. Oh, that's About Last Night.
Yeah, you're confusing those. I thought you were going Scarlet Letter, which was also, I think, shot in Chicago. But yeah, if you like buddy cop movies, and I do, which I can't defend, but I dig that genre. That's one of my favorites, and that's one that not a lot of people have seen. So people should see Running Scared, not the crazy Paul Walker one, although maybe see that one too, because that is too much movie.
Did you say Paul Walker?
There's a Running Scared that came out a few years ago where Paul Walker.
Yeah, no. Brian O'Connor. Okay, go on.
Yeah, yeah. Spelvin. I mean O'Connor. Bruh. And then I just today rewatched Unforgiven.
Oh, okay.
Because
for any reason, or just because you
liked? Erica had never seen it, and and so she liked it, and that's a great movie. Although, I had more issues with it than I ever have. It's really good, but I almost feel like Clint Eastwood is like the weakest thing about it, which isn't fair to say, because like if it's not Clint Eastwood, I would argue that movie doesn't work. Because of what he like represents as a screen character and in sort of movie history than having anything to do with his performance, because he sort of gives the same performance in Unforgiven that he gave in like Gran Torino.
Oh, then that's such a good movie.
And he's definitely the worst thing about Gran Torino. Yes. What are your feelings about 17 again?
Oh, I still love it.
That movie's all over HBO. I think of you every time right now, flip past it.
we postpone this podcast. If it's on right now, I want to see it. There's a new app on iPhone called HBO Go, which I don't know why I'm promoting an HBO thing.
Yeah, because like, you love Game of Thrones. That's why.
We're not obviously sponsored by anyone, let alone HBO, but there's something called
HBO Go. By the way, HBO, if you want to sponsor us, please do.
Absolutely.
We would love HBO sponsorship. Go,
free app on an iPhone or I guess an iPad too, where you can like, if you just enter your, like, I'm a subscriber to HBO through Dish Network. I just enter my Dish Network login information and I could stream any HBO show anytime I want.
Wow.
You know, so I'm thinking like if I'm
like
on
that's
the treadmill.
On or like.
No. In fact, because I think Band of Brothers was one
get
of the
out
options
of town.
Or something too.
You
Dream
can,
On.
I was going to say you could get into Dream On. First and 10.
First and 10.
Not necessarily the news.
So when I'm on the tread, I'm just kidding. I'm never on the. When I'm on the toilet, I definitely watch HBO. Patrick, you love buddy cop movies.
If I do.
One of us were Tango.
Yes.
And one of us were Cash.
Yes.
Who would be Murtaugh? Ooh. And who would be Riggs?
I feel like, here's the thing. I feel like, I don't know. I mean, in some respects, I identify more with a Cash and a Murtaugh, but that could just be my own willingness to die. Because I also identify with Murtaugh in that I am too old for this shit. Also, my daughter was in a condom commercial. So there's like a lot that I identify with.
And the one time you saved me, I saved you when you were on the toilet. We jumped into the cast iron bathtub together.
Yes.
But there was no bomb, which was the, well, whatever.
And like, if I was ever going to say, see, sometimes I think you're the Murtaugh, because like, let's say I said to you, diplomatic immunity, what would you say?
I think I might say, it might sound a little something like this. It's just been revoked.
I swear to God, I thought Glover was on the other end of my computer screen. What? On the other end of the microphone. This is either the worst or the best podcast we've ever done.
I'm thinking neither. Wait, worst. I'm sorry, worst.
Let's talk about Fast Five. That's what everybody's tuning in for.
Yes. I'll go back to what you said before about clearing your weekend, because I want to know, because I think on the surface, people might perceive Fast Five as a very stupid, you know, just loud, obnoxious action, mindless action movie. Why, if people have that perception, which I think a lot of people do, why would you want to clear your calendar to watch Fast Five?
Well, I don't even know that those people are entirely wrong. The first time I saw the trailer for Fast Five, I was seeing The Mechanic with Jason Statham.
And you saw The Mechanic starring Jason Statham with the Jason Statham?
Yeah, he was right next to me and he was all like, I can't do a British accent. I wanted to be like, when we were doing this show, I stubbed my toe, but I didn't sound like Statham. He's like,
when I was having sex on the horse track.
That was some high voltage. Jeff Chelios, you motherfucker.
Listen. That movie fascinates me too, by the way. That's a Bad Lieutenant Port of Call fascination type movie.
Yes, I like those movies. Yeah. So the trailer comes on for Fast Five, and I don't know it because there's like a reveal, sort of. It's like it's The Rock, and he's talking. He's doing his spiel, his Tommy Lee Jones. We're going to search every outhouse, boathouse, townhouse.
He's like, one's a, you know, an ex FBI agent who knows everything. One's a convicted felon who's broken out of two jails. Right. He's like, stop them. And the last, sorry, if you want to,
Never let them get into cars or whatever. And that's when they reveal.
I would have said so much better than
Go ahead. No, do your Rock. You're the Rich Little of F this movie. So bust
that. No. It's a really big share. That's my Rock.
Bust out your Rock. Come on.
I don't have a Rock, but he just says, because by the way, he is just a cartoon character in real life. He is the Tooth Fairy. He is in this movie. I don't know why. Honestly, I don't know why he's in this movie.
But his presence in this movie is awesome. So he says, don't ever let them get into cars. And in the trailer, that's when they reveal, like, it's the new Fast and Furious movie. And the audience that I was with, which was half to three quarters full of adults, this was a rated R action movie, like, at night. These were adults. These weren't teenagers. There was like an audible gasp of excitement when they realized this was a new fact. And I was like, are you fucking kidding? I was disgusted. Are you kidding me? And then give it 2.5 minutes. And guess what? I'm like, I'm totally going to see that because the trailer made me so excited to see it. Yeah. And there were a lot of cool shots, and I was like, oh, there's some neat action in there. But B, and this is so lame, because we're going to have to go back and like talk about our history with the Fast and Furious franchise, which I'm not the world's biggest fan of. I like the first movie. The others, I was, you know, lukewarm to down on. So I'm not the audience for Fast Five, but I was so excited to see, I got a burp, hold on, to see, I'm all full of love for Fast Five. I was excited to see that they brought everyone back. And that sounds so stupid because it's like, I don't even necessarily have affection for the characters, but what I liked was, because the franchise has been all over the place, Too Fast, Too Furious is barely a sequel to Fast and Furious, except that, like, it has Paul Walker and he's sort of playing the same guy. Fast and Furious,
Too
Tokyo...
Fast, Too Furious also, I'm sorry to cut you off, but it also, you're completely correct in that it's barely a movie, let alone a sequel, but it also introduces Roman Pierce and Ja Rule, or Ludacris' character.
Right. So
which make appearances in Fast Five. That's the only,
So it wasn't even like totally a sequel. And then you get to Tokyo Drift, which is like the Halloween 3 of Fast and Furious. It was like the American Pie band camp. It's just like, we're just using the brand name, but it's a totally different movie, totally different story. And spoiler alert, Vin Diesel does make a cameo at the end to tie it into the series. But for the most part, it's just, here's a movie about racing and we're branding it Fast and Furious.
Right.
And then, you know, for, this is going to get so confusing, Fast and Furious, the fourth movie.
Which they had to know what they were doing, but still it's like.
That was a bad decision.
But in the day and age when, like, titles are the worst always everything, it's like Fast and Furious, they could have gone. I think actually think Fast Five is an okay title.
It's fine. At least it's not so confusing.
Right. Yeah, right. If nothing else, it's not confusing or too convoluted, like Dark of the Moon or The Curse of the Jade Scorpion, or I don't know. Is that a movie?
Michael Bay's Curse of the Jade Scorpion. So they kind of brought people back for that one. But again, Fast and Furious was essentially just a sequel to the first movie. It ignored parts 2 and 3. And
logically, too, chronologically, it actually takes place
before Tokyo Drift. All these movies do. And there's a reason for that, and we'll get to that when we maybe get into spoilers. We're not going to spoil Fast 5 for a long time, and then at a certain point, we're getting into spoilers about Fast 5. So if you haven't seen the movie yet...
And that certain time is right now!
Whoa! If you haven't seen it yet, please listen for a while, and we'll cue you when you should turn it off if you don't want to have it spoiled. Recently, we did a podcast on Scream 4. And Scream 4... did what I was happy that Fast Five didn't do. Scream 4 brings back all the original people, and it's like, here's a sequel to a movie that maybe we didn't need a sequel to, but it ignores 2 and 3. And I understand 2 and 3 aren't great, and they weren't the most beloved, but it essentially acts as though only the first movie ever happened. And I like the fact that even if Fast and Furious 2, 3, and 4 aren't great, depending on how you feel about them, I like the fact that this movie, this is such a long way to explain that, like, I was happy that Tyrese was in a movie. But, like, I like that, you know, that was always my big thing with Lost, was, like, even if it's bad, figure out a way to course correct, acknowledge your mistakes, incorporate it into a story. And that's what I feel like this movie did, that it was like, no, we're going to bring everyone back. And by the way, the bringing everyone back was the best thing this movie did, because those scenes are the most fun in the movie.
Yeah. So you want Keely Sanchez to be acknowledged more in Lost?
Yes.
And the couple that gets buried with all the diamonds.
Paolo and Nikki.
Right. Season 3, that it's like kind of off the rails. It's like, well,
mostly because we went to school. This is a good time to talk about on F This Movie, how we went to school with Keely Sanchez.
Keely Sanchez plays Nikki in Lost. She's in a couple other things too, none of which I can name right now, nor do I have the inclination to look them up on Google.
A Perfect Getaway?
I've never heard of this, so.
She's in it.
Yeah. But we're talking about Lost. I'm sorry. Yeah, we're talking Lost about cast. Scream 4.
Scream 4 cast. We already did that show. Shit.
We're talking about Fast 5. I was a little intrigued too, only because I probably have a little more affection for the franchise than you do. Only in as much, and this might sound really douchey, that I like cars a lot. I used to own an old classic car, and I really enjoy it.
It was a minivan.
Saying that, it was a Voyager, a Plymouth Voyager, so it was, you know, very nice. But
it was the kind where the front like tapered, like a spaceship.
It looked like a dustbuster.
A classic, if you will.
So I was a little, but all that being said, like I like cars. I have to acknowledge that, like you're right. Aside from the first movie, and I think Tokyo Drift does a serviceable job for the car freaks out there. But the other movies are not about cars really. They're just about like they're just chase movies almost, and just not very good, especially Too Fast, Too Furious. I mean, and that was the only movie directed by John Singleton. And the funny thing is Justin Lin, his first movie was Tokyo Drift. So that's just like, you know, the only one that kind of really stands out on its own is like totally separate and distinct. But he's directed then Fast and Furious and then Fast Five.
Yeah. I actually, in rewatching all of them, which I totally did in preparation for Fast Five, because that's how I do, I gained new affection for Too Fast, Too Furious. I don't think it's a good movie, but I think it's more self-aware than I once gave it credit for, because I hadn't seen it since the day it opened. And again, we were fans of the Fast and Furious. We went the night it opened, and it's like a dumb movie, but I think it knows what it is. It's got some good like practical stunt work. It's got some cool car stuff. It's essentially just Point Break, and how can you go wrong remaking Point Break?
For the record, Patrick loves Point Break.
Yes, I do. And you know, it's basically that same movie. So I always felt like it's sort of sincere. It knows what it is. I think there were a few good, not good performances, but like I think Vin Diesel in that first movie has a presence and a charisma and feels kind of like a movie star. I think Michelle Rodriguez, say what you will about her, she's given the same performance over and over again. That was sort of early in her career, and she seemed sort of authentic and charismatic. So I thought they worked. I liked a lot of stuff about the first movie. I saw the second one, I think the day it opened, expecting a sequel, and it's like, what is this movie? They're running around in Florida. It's kind of a buddy cop movie. Tyrese was kind of grating because he just kept going, bruh, bruh, and they're just like bickering, and that's not good. But rewatching it, I think it has a better handle on the movie that it is. And now that I know that like each movie is a completely different movie, they're not really sequels to each other. I mean, they include some of the same characters, but like in the way that the Alien series, like each entry in the Alien franchise is a totally different movie. This movie's kind of the same way, or this franchise is kind of the same way.
Yeah, but you could also, I think that you're onto something only with Too Fast, Too Furious and Tokyo Drift. I mean, but for all intents and purposes, the first one and Fast and Furious and Fast Five are definitely true movies. Like they're true sequels to one another. I mean, they definitely.
Yeah, but I think they go about, because so are the Alien movies. I mean, they're sequels to one. They follow sequentially, you know, the characters and what happens. But like they have such wildly different approaches. Whereas the first movie is just sort of a Point Break, undercover cop movie, and the second movie is this wacky like Bad Boys in Florida buddy cop movie, and the third movie is like a teenage hot rod movie, and the fourth movie tries really hard to be almost like this fucking chamber drama. I mean, it's so like serious and gray, and this movie is just a full-on heist movie. This isn't even a racing movie at all. Yeah, and they've said that's the direction they're gonna go now.
I can agree. I can agree with that. I think that the point you want to make, though, about Alien or the Alien franchise is that each one, I think, felt so different, obviously, because it's different directors doing vastly different things with their direction. I mean, the first one is almost like a horror movie, and the second one's an action movie, and that's James Cameron, and the third one is Fincher, right? And I actually haven't seen – is there a fourth? Yeah, right?
Alien Resurrection?
I never saw that.
It's crazy.
But it's because it's different directors. And you could say the same thing with this franchise to a point, because obviously Rob Cohen did the first one, then Singleton did the second one. But I think that maybe it's just me, the last two, Fast Five and Fast and Furious, and it's the same director, Justin Lin, are very much companion pieces, I think. And you obviously saw something different. You said it's very serious. I think they're very similar. I think that they weren't – and I'm just going to jump to the sure. My point, I guess. I'm not a huge fan of Fast Five. I didn't respond to it as well as most other people did. I thought it was kind of boring. I don't want to, again, this is just like me, just sounds like I'm criticizing a movie. Now, that's not what this podcast is about. Obviously, we're going to talk about it and kind of my feelings towards it, how it might change over time, things like that. But having just seen Fast and Furious, the fourth movie, for the first time maybe 2 months ago, I was like, okay, it was fine. It was serviceable. It wasn't anything that blew my hair back. And this movie, I was really kind of surprised why it got such, it's kind of funny too. And I'll time out myself right there and say that we had all cleared our schedules. We had talked about seeing Fast Five. We had talked about doing a podcast on this. And I remember we're talking on the phone. You're like, yeah, if you've looked like on Rotten Tomatoes or whatever, it's getting really good reviews. It's been, I think as Thursday, the early screenings, it was like people were responding to it really well. And I'm like, well, that's encouraging because obviously it might be something, it might be a departure, it might be something totally different. And I saw what I saw, and again, this is my opinion, it didn't feel any different. It felt like every other movie that I saw of the, not every other, I mean, obviously they're very different, but it felt very much in that same vein. And I think the reason people responded to it positively was because they finally get the joke or get what it's trying to be, where it's like, it's not very serious. No one takes themselves too seriously. You need to have actors in it like Paul Walker and like Vin Diesel who are...
So, well, you know, at least one actor takes himself very seriously, but we'll get to that.
Okay. Yeah, but my point is almost like a Starship Troopers kind of way. You need to have actors in it. Let me clarify what I'm saying. I'm not saying the actors know what they're doing necessarily, although I think some definitely do know the movie that they're in. But I think that you need to have actors like in Starship Troopers where they're, you know, Paul Verhoeven's casting all the 90210 actors and actresses right. who definitely don't know what movie they're in and are so sincere and so ridiculous that they don't, you know, realize how, and that's right. what makes it fun for us as an audience. I definitely see some of that in, because I think Vin Diesel, I mean, it's just, he's complete, I don't even know what to say.
He's on a separate planet where he is a god, apparently. Oh my God. Movie unfortunately builds him up that way. Again, not to spoil anything,
he
but
definitely
just like,
is like just a god, like he is.
And I don't want to spoil anything, but like it bums me out because like his performance is so self-serious and he tends to drag the movie down anytime he's like sort of by himself on screen. When he's with the other people, I don't mind him because I like the way that the other characters sort of bounce off of him. And he definitely has a totally different, and I don't mean this, I don't mean good necessarily, but a different energy about him than everybody else on screen. And so that all works, but when there's scenes where it's like just him and like the cop in Brazil, the female cop in Brazil, right. like, or anytime he gets like speeches, I mean, the movie grinds to a halt. And unfortunately the movie again keeps making the case that like Vin Diesel is awesome and he's right. never loses at anything ever. He is the best at everything. He is the king. And that's a bummer because, again, the movie could stand to humanize him a little bit, I think. But again, Fast Five doesn't really need to humanize any of its characters. I get these are just cartoons.
You're onto something in that, like, he is the leader of this gang. Right. Whether the gang is of himself or of his old street crew from Los Angeles or whether it's his sister and Brian, Paul Walker's character, he's the leader. And I thought to myself watching it on Friday, like, why is he the leader? Like, he's obviously the least educated of anyone in this group. Like, Paul Walker obviously has like, he was an FBI agent. He was a former LA cop. He knows his way. And he's like, but Dominic Toretto is the leader and he, whatever he says goes. And even Matt right. Schulze or whatever, Vince, who makes an appearance. He's from the first movie.
Good to see Vince back.
I don't think he's been in one since the first movie.
No.
He even kind of makes a thing where Paul Walker's accusing him of something and Vince is like, Dominic, you have to trust me. Like, you've never trusted me. When I said he was a cop, you didn't believe me. When I said this, you didn't believe me. And it's like, yeah, you're right. Dominic's made a bunch of bad decisions. He's like he has a horrible read of persons. You know, he can't.
But he's awesome.
Right.
He's and it's always like, awesome. And even when you think he might not be awesome, guess what? He's still awesome.
And I'm not going to impersonate Vin Diesel or anything, but there's a bunch of lines, right? Where it's like it's in this warehouse and they're lit very harshly. It's very harsh, you know, black, it's the darks are very dark and it's very lit very brightly. And he's like, they're yelling. He's like, every gesture he makes too, it's like a college kid who's flexing his muscles for the first time. Like, oh, the gun show is that way. And he flexes. And it's just like, but he's screaming.
But he like growls
lines.
Every line. Just, I can't do it. But
he also looks like he's a little tubby too. And just like, yeah. I don't know. Nothing about him really is, you know.
Well, he's not Vin Diesel of 10 years ago. And I don't think he's aged particularly well. I mean, he looks similar, but like he looks like a sausage stuffed in a casing now, you know. I think Paul Walker with age,
you mean like
on
a pillow case things? Like he's a sausage stuffed in a pillow case.
He's like a sausage pillow that I want to sleep on and eat. The things he's going to do for his country. Paul Walker, I think with age on him, has actually become a little bit more interesting. And I actually liked him in the movie. And I've never liked Paul Walker in a movie before because he's just this blank slate.
Two quick things about Vin Diesel. I read today that he got paid. He's also a producer on this movie, which is just like, what? What are you offering? Like, he's like, what about in this scene, the car jumps through the train? Like, yes, thank you for executive producing the shit out of this scene. He got paid for his producing and acting $15 million. And I'm not even sure if that's like, you know, who knows if he gets money, if the movie makes more money, you know, if he gets some back and stuff. But I'm like, what am I doing wrong in my life?
Well, but these movies are crazy successful. The Fast Five just set records for the biggest April opening ever. It made $83 million almost in its opening weekend. Yeah.
And internationally, it was like 163 already.
So it's like, this movie has banked. And the popularity of these movies is astounding to me. Like, I had no idea that this many people loved the Fast and Furious franchise. Vin Diesel is an interesting guy, though. I mean, not really, but like he priced himself out of the sequel.
Don't get me wrong,
like,
he's incredibly boring.
Fast and Furious, the original, the Fast and the Furious, was like a hit, not a giant hit, but like it was successful.
Yeah.
And so right away, let's do a sequel. And Vin Diesel asks for too much money, and they say, "All right, F you, we're doing it without you." And he goes off to be a movie star, and he makes Triple X, and that makes money, and he makes The Pacifier, and that makes money, and then he is in this string of bombs, and it's like
Pitch Black.
Pitch Black was first, actually, but The Chronicles of Riddick, of course.
But that's what I meant. Pitch Black was first.
That was a bomb. And then he comes back to the Fast and Furious franchise after pricing himself out, and it makes him a movie star again, and now he can make $15 million. It's crazy. Like,
it's insane.
Well, because so Vin Diesel kind of fails the movie star test because he had a few hits on his own, but for the most part, he didn't. So people want to see Vin Diesel, but they only want to see him in Fast and Furious movies.
As Dominic Toretto, absolutely.
Which I guess is fine because they're already making a sixth movie. I mean, who knows where this thing is going to stop, because the fifth one is probably going to be the most successful, and I would argue is the best. And I know you weren't crazy about it, but like,
I would argue not at all the best.
It's fascinating to me that, like, by the fifth movie, they finally are kind of like, oh, here's what it should be. And a lot of elements for me came together right. Now, I'm not saying that Fast Five is like a really smart movie, because there are scenes that are incredibly dumb. I mean, like, the action itself is kind of, is crazy over the top. But I like that. I mean, in the first 5 minutes, they're flipping a bus over, and they're really doing it. It's not CGI. See, the first scene in Fast and Furious, the fourth movie, I really didn't like, because they're like playing chicken with this flaming, rolling oil tanker.
Yeah.
Do you remember this? And it's
Dominican Republic, right?
And it's so obviously CGI. It's like, why is this at all interesting to me? When they flip a real bus, that's cool. Someone did that. There was a lot of that in this movie, a lot of like more practical stuff, which I really liked. I thought all the action was staged really well. When we get to the climax, which we won't talk about until spoilers, although a lot of the trailers and clips kind of give it away, I had never seen that before. And there's insane amounts of destruction, and it was a lot of fun to watch.
That's your review. It's like you kind of agree with people and saying that it's a lot of fun. It's a dumb movie that's a lot of fun to watch. I don't know, like filming.
I mean, I don't even think it's totally dumb. I think there are some scenes that are...
That movie is the dumbest. Are you kidding me?
No, see, I don't agree. I don't agree. I think there are some scenes that are really dumb, and I think a lot of the Vin Diesel stuff does not work because he is in a different movie. Not just his performance, but his character is in this different movie. I think the first, like, 40 minutes, there's an action sequence that opens the film that's pretty entertaining. There's another...
Talk about that. I mean, that's...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like an escape. That's cool.
Because that was at the end of the last movie.
They're stealing. You know? Well, right. But then there's a sequence where they steal cars off of a moving train. And it doesn't make any sense. But it's just like, I've never seen that. I kind of liked that.
That was actually probably my favorite sequence in the whole movie. And then maybe it kind of went downhill for me.
And then there's a foot chase that's okay. Yeah. But the first like 45 minutes are, like you said, a little bit slow, a little bit heavy on like exposition, and we got to split up. No, let's stick together. And it's like, it's just these three characters, none of whom are particularly interesting. It's not really until they called in like the old gang that for me, the movie really kind of came to life. And there's two scenes that almost butt up right against one another. There's one of Paul Walker and Tyrese and Ludacris. And I forget what they're doing. It's just the three of them. They're like in a car and they're ripping on each other. I think it's when Tyrese has to go into a police station. You know what I'm talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not that that scene is great, but like, and they're just laughing and making fun of each other, and it's like kind of fun. And then the very next scene is like Vin Diesel alone in the apartment with Elsa Pataky, and it's like, these are two totally different movies, and right. I want to see the one where the three guys are having fun in a car. I don't want to see Vin Diesel acting out his tortured Shakespearean bullshit.
It reminded me, there's a scene in Fast and Furious, the fourth movie, where...
I hate that we have to every time say Fast
I know,
and Furious.
Right?
You know, the fourth one, not the first one, the fourth one.
Where Paul Walker is surveilling a funeral. I forget who dies, but I think it might be Letty.
Spoilers.
Who dies. Well, that's for the fourth one, right?
Yeah.
That's yeah. So there's a funeral and Paul Walker is an FBI.
Who dies off camera in one of the worst decisions ever made in movies, but
So he's surveilling for as part of the law enforcement this thing, and he cuts to like, by the way, the surveillance is on like on one level of a hill above the cemetery, and then he looks back and on another level of the hill is Vin Diesel standing in front of like an oil rig, and it's just such a bad like push in on his like muscles, but he's just right. like such a meathead, and just I don't, you know, and I felt like every time that's what my kind of feeling about Vin Diesel now, I picture him in front of a derrick or a dike, what do you call those oil things that go up and down, you know, and it, you know, just a really bad shot of him, and I don't know, this everything he says is I don't know.
Isn't it? Vin Diesel is so weird. Not to keep, I don't want to make this Vin Diesel cast, but like, let's go back to the beginning of his career when he was like this interesting guy that you're like, I think he's going to be a movie star, and I understood it and I accepted it. Saving Private Ryan, he's not a huge factor, but okay, I think he registers in that movie. Boiler Room, I think he's actually really great in Boiler Room, giving a performance that he hasn't given in any other movie. He does the voice for Iron Giant, so he's, you know, not necessarily versatile, but like he's
But there's no voice in Iron Giant. I mean, that's like just he I think they say Superman at the end, and that's pretty much it. There's really,
oh, really?
No, you know.
Okay. But he's still, I guess, associated with something that people love.
Sure.
Pitch Black, he's good in Pitch Black, and that movie is, you know, kind of small and modest, and he's good in it. And then the original Fast and Furious, and it's like, okay, I see where this guy's career could be interesting and worth following, and then it just completely falls apart, and now this is the, you know, the series that he's always going to be associated with.
Right.
But he's the least interesting thing about it at this point.
But maybe that, I hate to say it, is that just you and me, or I mean, and people who might be listening
probably.
To this podcast? Because I think a lot of people actually do like really think he's interesting and like, man, I wish I was that strong and was such a leader and also
right.
really dumb and make horrible decisions like I do now. But I wish I was strong and was a leader, you know, on top of that, because that's all Dominic Toretto is. He's like, you know, drives his dad's old 70s Charger and, you know. Doesn't, you know, trust his friends. I don't know. But then he like, you have to say grace. Remember that from the first movie?
There are a lot of callbacks to past movies, which really only work if you've just watched all four of them in the past week, because then you remember, oh, when Tyree says, I'm hungry, that's a callback to Too Fast, Too Furious. Like, someone is calling back to Too Fast, Too Furious. I don't know. Again, I there are lines of dialogue that are horrible. There are some non-existent characters, but I think for an action movie, and we so rarely, I mean, we get so many action movies, but I think we get so few good ones. And I think this was a good action movie. And I think it's because the movie speaks more to my interests. I always sort of could care less about the racing stuff. I'm not into cars, as you said, really. And car races don't interest me all that much. So the fact that this movie sort of morphed into a, like, let's get the gang back together and pull off a heist, appealed to me much more. Even if, you know, the gang isn't all that interesting. I mean, the girl that they bring back from Part 4, not great. The Bickerson twins, I could do without. but nobody's on screen for, like, that long. And I feel like they sort of make use of everybody. And they bring back Han. And I love Han. I do.
Han's an interesting character. No, honestly, of all the characters, I think he might be the most. And that's like kind of what they set him up to be also. It's like, he's an interesting guy. He's always talking, you know, like that's.
Right. And they, you know, they shot themselves in the foot. Spoilers for Tokyo Drift. They kill off Han in Tokyo Drift. And so in order to keep him around, these have to become like prequels. And there's this very obvious shout out to that.
I totally forgot Tokyo Drift that he. Oh.
Do you remember his last line in the movie?
No,
Fast Five. I don't want to spoil it because we're not in spoilers yet. So we can wait till we get to spoilers. But
well,
there's a very there's a very obvious reference to that at the end of Fast Five. But he's great. And what's amazing to him, what's amazing about him is that I think he doesn't really do much. He just kind of walks around and he eats chips and he doesn't change his facial expression that much. But like, he's super cool, I think. Like, I just like watching him. He's a cool guy. Like,
he just has a major boner for Gail Gadot or Gal Gadot.
He doesn't, but like, he doesn't try and be cool. He doesn't force anything. I just think he comes off cool versus Vin Diesel, who is working overtime to be cool. The screenwriters are working overtime. Justin Lin is working. Everybody's working overtime to sell us on how cool Vin Diesel or Dominic Toretto is. But, you know, to me, Han sort of steals the whole movie.
Oh, interesting. You know, I take issue with your statement about like action movies, because I agree. It's funny because I think we agree so much, but I think our conclusions are different about this movie, about action movies, and about some certain things surrounding this movie, because you're absolutely right. Because you, and I think that this is what I've read also in reviews of this movie, where people acknowledge like it's a lot of dumb fun. If you start to insert too much logic in it, like you shoot yourself in the foot, you know, hinder yourself from having fun, because you just have to leave all that stuff at the door. You cannot just, you know, start picking this thing apart, because it presents itself as a really loud, dumb, kind of obnoxious, not obnoxious, but just, you know, in your face movie. But I get angry because I see all these positive reviews. And again, the reviews weren't like 4 stars by any means. You know, they're just saying like, oh, this was a pleasant surprise. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking like, you assholes, you're the same cabal of you know, elite. That sounds so fucking lame of me to say that, but of reviewers who like rip on Sucker Punch. Who,
sure.
You know, like Sucker Punch obviously is not their cup of tea, but they can't even acknowledge the originality behind that. They can't acknowledge how that movie's trying something different, that movie is like kind of just playing around with types and playing around with you know, plot and things like that. That I have never seen a movie quite like that before, even though it's inspired by lots of things I have seen. Like, that movie was this pastiche of all this other crap. And then you've got Fast Five, which again, for me, and maybe I you know, in deference to you, how you watched all the 4 previous movies like directly before having seen this. I really did think Fast Five was like fine. You know, like, I'm not even saying it's like a bad movie, but I'm just like, why are people like praising this movie? Like, it's so great. To me, it's like, it's a little better than Fast and Furious, which was just a movie I recorded on HBO or Epics or something and watched on a Friday afternoon, you know. For me, the first one is still the movie I like the most. I think it's the most fun. I think it's the most simple. And that's part of my issue with sequels, I guess. And I'm not against sequels. I love sequels. But I think that oftentimes what people have to do, be it, you know, the directors or the screenwriters or the actors, they have to up the stakes, up the ante, and take it to some exotic location. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, what worked so well, or what worked for me so much about the first movie was just like, it is just about a dopey street racing team. It's not about $100 million in Rio de Janeiro from the kingpin of this drug, you know.
Let's not forget, though, that the first movie is about a street racing team that steals DVD players off of moving semis. Like, you didn't want to wait till the semi parked to steal a DVD player. Maybe that had a lot more cachet in the year 2000. Like, really? A DVD player? Awesome. I'll buy you 10 from Walgreens right now. Still have money for Coke Zero. I agree that the first one is definitely sort of the most simple and streamlined, again, because it's just borrowing the plot from Point Break. And this one is way over the top and includes a ton of different elements. The characters from the past movies, the whole heist plot, Dwayne Johnson as the federal office marshal, you know, chasing them down. But to me, they pulled it off. I think Justin Lin sort of managed to balance all of those elements successfully. And I've seen plenty of sequels, like you're saying, even like comic book sequels do it all the time. Look at Spider-Man 3 or Iron Man 2 for me.
Right.
Where they introduce all this stuff and they try and juggle too much and they fail, it doesn't mean it's always a bad movie, but I feel like in this movie he managed to sort of juggle everything successfully. And I agree with what you're saying about Sucker Punch. I feel like so many of the people that, you know, really trashed Sucker Punch, it almost went over their heads. And that's not fair to say, obviously, because I'm sure there's plenty of people who got it, who saw what it was going for and just thought that it failed at what it was trying to do.
Right.
And people probably look at Fast Five and say, okay, I see what it's trying to do, which is obviously considerably less, but that it succeeds at what it's trying to do.
And I think obviously there's, you know, I think reviewers, aside from like, there's obviously a upper echelon of reviewers, like the Eberts out there, the people that can speak their minds and have their own opinions and aren't kind of swayed or cajoled one way or another by the masses. But I think there's a lot of like the, you know, it's funny, you look at Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic or, you know, some other websites out there. Is it Metacritic? Is that what I'm thinking of? The one, yeah, that's another kind of like, you know.
It's pronounced Metacritic.
But it's like these web, you know, it kind of, you know, takes all the reviews from the, from newspapers and websites and stuff and kind of, you know, compiles them into one stop shop, you know, reviews. And I think that, that now it's like, you look at, you know, maybe 10 years ago, there was maybe 50 reviewers that you'd look at, and 50 is a lot of reviewers, but it's like the, and then it's like, well, you realize, okay, there's all the major cities newspapers and maybe some other like really big websites reviewers. And now every goddamn website has a reviewer. I mean, I guess we're no exception. We're providing the same service. We're a small website, but I think we have a different voice to give, hopefully, and hopefully people acknowledge that. If not, you know, screw you and don't listen. So, but no, it's like there's so many different reviewers out there, and I'm thinking like, well, there's 350 or 400 reviewers, and I think so many of them, and not to say like we got it or that we're above that fray, because I get swept up just as anyone does in excitement and buzz about certain things. But I think so many of them for Sucker Punch were just like, well, it seems like it's kind of going that way. And, you know, it's a lot harder, I think, to stand out and say, wait a minute, hold on. This movie, kind of acknowledging what you have to say about it, you know, it's not perfect. It's definitely flawed. But come on, give it some props for being so ambitious and things like that. And I think, I don't really think there's too much ambitious about Fast Five. I think Fast Five, if you want to say it's ambitious because it brings back a previous cast, I mean, to me, it's like it was like an Ocean's 11 ripoff.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and it just, it didn't do it nearly as well. Full disclosure, I'm a huge Ocean's 11 fan. You know, horribly let down by the sequels, but Ocean's 11, it's on, actually, I don't know why, it's on HBO a lot these days, and I find myself stopping on it every single time it's on.
That movie's super watchable.
It's unbelievably fun and great and complicated. You know, like the movies do a great thing of being like very complicated, but it's like you just have to look past certain things. In this movie, it's not like, in Ocean's 11, there's no real flaws that stick out. It just, you kind of have to accept that what they're doing, they're so good at their jobs that they got it accomplished, you know? And I see Fast Five is like, well, you're kind of cribbing from Ocean's 11. You're cribbing from obviously the previous four movies, the mystique of all the characters and things like that. But ultimately it's kind of boring characters, I think. I mean, Paul Walker is really boring. Vin Diesel is, you know, kind of a joke. Jordana Brewster, as much as I want to think she's attractive, as much as I like want to be like, because I do like the dark hair and the dark eyes, but she has like lost so much weight and her lips are so thin.
Yeah, her upper lip has completely disappeared at this point.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. It's like she is the leftovers from Demi Moore's surgeries or something. As much as I want to like them, and granted, I do, because I'm not immune to dumb kind of fun movies. I love that kind of stuff. And in that sense, Fast Five is definitely watchable. I'll rewatch it. It's probably a movie I'll put on five times more than I'd put on Raging Bull, because I am, you know, looking for an easy thing to watch that's, you know, I could pull off my DVD shelf or find on Netflix or something, just put on and like, wow, this is so kind of mindless but fun and exciting. My only thing with it was like, why are these critics being given it such a pass or such like, oh, I saw one local morning news guy that says, I typically don't like action movies, but this one won me over. And I'm like, why? What about this movie was that much different than Fast and Furious? I mean, it's still like, just, I guess if you want to say it's because Fast and Furious was like a chamber drama, was very serious, was all grays, I acknowledge some of that, but I mean, the differences are so microscopic in my mind. I still really enjoyed Fast Five, but I know, and I won't spoil it until we get to the end, but the end sequence, I was watching and absorbing, but after like 5 minutes, I just realized my face, the expression on my face hadn't changed. And I'm just watching it like a dog watches an aquarium, you know, like that I'm watching these. And I'm just like, what, you know, like this thing is okay. And just, you know, it was fine. It was fun. It's like, if your argument is like, I had never seen that before. It was fine, I guess, you know.
But I like when a movie shows me something I haven't seen, because I see a lot of movies and so many of them do repeat the same things that I like that Justin Lin. I'm not saying Fast and Furious is an ambitious movie in the way that Sucker Punch is an ambitious movie, but like for a Fast and Furious movie, for an action movie, I think it tries to tackle some things. I mean, you can't compare it to something like Inception, but like
But let's.
You know, I saw The Expendables last summer, and like The Expendables should have been awesome, but like it so isn't. And this movie does try to do some crazy stuff, like steal cars off of a moving train and flipping right. buses and surfing cars down like into a river where they jump off, and that's in all the trailers too.
Real quick though, that sequence, and it's the whole sequence with them stealing the cars off the train and the car jumping off. That's a great little piece of action.
Right. And I thought there were several of those in the movie that I enjoyed. I recognize that, again, none of the performances are particularly great. None of the characters are very well developed at all. If I sat here and said, tell me, describe, Mia Toretto. Like, you can't. You could say she's Dominic's sister, and you're out. Describe Brian O'Connor.
Like, I can describe Mia Toretto in that I'm pregnant.
What? Yeah, well, yeah. That's fairly early on.
And just like, okay, you're pregnant because at this point in the franchise or at this point in the movie, it's like, yes, you need to, we need to have more stakes. So let me pull up my filmmaker, screenwriter's, you know, thesaurus or, you know, crib sheet guide. Right. And it's like, oh, let's make her pregnant. And thereby unite the family if this is really about
which
family.
Which I feel like I so wanted them to reference that. Like, that revelation comes out shortly after this long foot chase where they jump through, like, the roof of this house. And I so wanted in the next scene when she says, I'm pregnant, I so wanted Paul Walker to be like, you should have told me that before we jumped through the roof of that house. Like, that wasn't safe what we just did for our unborn baby. But, of course, the movie fails to do that. So none of the characters are great. But, again, some of it is just familiarity with the actors from the previous movies. And it's more just sort of about a vibe that each actor gives off and the way that those kind of mix. And that's why the movie for me came alive when they brought the team back together, because those scenes watching these people bounce off of each other was way more interesting to me, even though none of the characters stands really well on his or her own. To watch them interact to me was kind of fun. You know, you say that Fast Five and Fast and Furious are not different movies really to you. And I think they're very, very different. And maybe that's where the disconnect is between our opinions of Fast Five, because Fast and Furious to me really did not work. I wanted to be excited about that movie too, because I was like, look, they brought back the people from the first Fast and Furious movie that I liked.
Right. Their gimmick is right there.
I mean, right. And I just thought it was so self-serious and so somber and boring. And I thought all of the actors seemed really bored. I don't know what that movie's about. I could not recount the plot to you. I watched it earlier this week. so much CGI. There's like a chase scene through a cave. Like, awesome. They're in the dark. It's a green screen. Why am I interested in any of this? I just felt like that movie, I think that's the worst of the bunch. I think that movie really dropped the ball. And so to see this movie sort of correct all those mistakes and bounce back and make a movie that's really, that's main focus is on being entertaining. And again, I give a lot of shit to movies that like, where people say like, oh, you're not supposed to think about it. You just turn your brain off. Have fun. It's a popcorn movie. Like, fuck this idea of a popcorn movie. I don't believe in that. But certainly there's something to be said for a movie that really wants to entertain you and does it skillfully. I think Justin Lin did a really good job in staging all the action. I think he pulled these elements together in a way that he didn't do in Fast and Furious. I think the big difference to me is that Fast Five is like a lot of fun. I had fun when I was watching it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I think that
I think all the actors are having fun.
If I don't know about that, but I do.
Except for Vin Diesel, because he's incapable of having fun. But I think everybody else seems to be really enjoying themselves.
Really having, I don't know. Like,
oh, I thought he was. I really thought.
I see, like, your
he was a lot looser than I've ever seen him be.
Your point about Ludacris and Tyrese, and that they do a lot of playful back and forth, and the other two Hispanic guys that do a lot of like funny things together, and they're in the back. You know, it's. But there's so much of the movie that's cut. And again, if your point is that yes, it's live action, it's not CGI. And movies need to be more like that. I completely, completely agree, because obviously watching, you know, a person on a green screen, it's like, it's not, and that's, you know, I remember the days when, you know, you'd watch a movie and it's like all these ships are coming into shore, whether it's like a revolutionary movie or something. It's like, oh my God, they got to get all these old ships. And now it's like, they can do that with a couple mouse clicks. And it's like nothing about that has gravity. So this definitely had some of that, but I do think that it still has a lot of the elements as that you point out as being flawed from Fast and Furious, the fourth movie, where you've got the seriousness, you've got this drug kingpin. Whenever he's on screen, I'm just like, what? Like, I get that we need a villain, but there's also like there's the FBI villain that's The Rock.
But the movie doesn't – I would argue that the movie doesn't devote that much time to him because I think, again, he's generic villain. And sure, so the movie doesn't worry about developing him as being particularly scary or menacing. It's just like, no, that's the bad guy. And I, again, because there's so much going on in the movie, right, I don't
but
feel
that's
like
the bad guy. But there's nothing funny about. There's nothing like fun about his character or anything. It's just kind of like there's a bad guy that like the messenger comes and says like, oh, they came and they burned money. They didn't steal the money. They burned it. It's a message to you, and he kills him with a paperweight. And I'm like, you obviously see it coming, but I'm like, what the heck is what's going on? You know,
right? But that was and that's the only scene we need of that guy. It's Al Capone with the baseball bat in Untouchables. You know, and it's like, oh, he's the bad guy. I get it. I think by piling so much into the movie, and usually this would be a criticism and maybe I'll see Fast Five again and feel totally different and be like, what movie was I watching? But because they piled so much into the movie, they never needed to spend that much time with any one thing. It could always keep kind of jumping around. And sometimes that would be a flaw. Spider-Man 3, that is the downfall of that movie. But like for this movie, it works because everything is so kind of lightweight that they need to just keep bouncing around so you don't notice how hollow right. It is, you know?
I have a Spider-Man 3 impersonation if you want to hear
it. All right, let's hear it. You just took a bite of pie?
Pie, I think. Okay. So good. All right, that's it.
I could go on but for right. days about Spider-Man 3.
Spider-Man, that's actually a good movie to F in the future.
And it's not about the dance sequence, by the way. For some reason, when everybody talks about Spider-Man 3, like, oh, that movie sucks, the movie's horrible. Yeah, I don't want to see Peter Parker dance. Like, guess what? That dance number, while bad, is not what's wrong with Spider-Man 3. But back to Fast 5. I liked also, again, the craziness that the movie keeps piling on sort of obstacles. We have the drug kingpin, we have The Rock, who gives a cartoonish performance, knows exactly what movie he's in, is playing this, like, I think they refer to him early on as, like, Old Testament, like, guy.
Yeah.
He's so larger than life, and I think he does it fine. I think he plays the part exactly the way it's supposed to be played. And he is a presence. I mean, you are like, what are they going to do if this guy ever tracks them down? Much more so than the drug kingpin. They give them this impossible heist to pull off. I mean, the movie just piles on all this ridiculous stuff. And again, to me, it does it with a sense of like energy and fun that is missing from Fast and Furious. And maybe because Fast and Furious is sort of this movie about like, I gotta get revenge for my murdered girlfriend or something. So it has to have that somber tone. And this movie didn't. It was just like, let's go rip off a bad guy. All right, great. Let's steal cars.
Well, obviously, Fast and Furious kind of shoots itself in the foot because it does set up that very serious, like, a girlfriend, like, your girlfriend's dead. So, like, of course we have to devote the next 2 hours to hunting down her murderer. And this is just like, well, let's kill, like, this guy's horrible. This is a horrible person from a different country.
We
let's
want
go
money.
With them.
Let's
tease him, basically.
Right. And let's burn his money.
And I like all that. All that stuff is good. And again, I feel like I'm coming across like I didn't enjoy my time in the theater when I saw it. I definitely did. I watched it. I saw it. I enjoyed it. I just found myself kind of like, I don't really see this as being the elevated version that I wanted it to be. Like, and I only got that impression, by the way, because I had read all these, reviews before I saw it and just like how it kind of reinvents itself and steps up and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, the first movie did that. And again, if your point is that it's because the first movie is Point Break, that's good too. And the first movie, obviously, you know, it gets away with it because you're just introducing characters and it's a lot of fun and it's very small and very simple. And this movie obviously is the complete opposite of that, but it doesn't quite go there for me. And again, I did find myself, well, do you want to do the spoiler stuff now? Do you want to get to that? Because I don't know how we're at with the timing.
Sure, yeah. So if you haven't seen Fast Five and you plan to see it, you can turn this off now, or you can have stuff spoiled for you, whatever. But we're going to start spoiling specific elements of Fast Five.
This whole thing is a spoiler necessarily because they I think they definitely show scenes in the trailer about this, but their whole point is to steal a vault.
Right.
It's in the police station. That's kind of a spoiler that the vault that they want to steal is in this police station. It's the most protected place. And this drug kingpin has got all these cops in his back pocket, blah, blah, blah. And they steal it. They don't break in there and crack the safe open and steal all the stuff like in Ocean's 11 or whatever. They hook up cables to their cars and they steal it by dragging it out. And here's the thing. Like, I don't care. Like, my critique with that is not about like that it's physically impossible, that it can't happen. All that stuff is irrelevant. Like, it's a fun, stupid popcorn movie, which everyone associated with the movie would acknowledge.
Right.
I just, my point with it was just kind of boring.
Okay. See, and I do tend to check out, of like car chases and stuff.
Right.
For whatever reason, I'll realize like, oh my gosh, a minute and a half has gone by and my mind has been elsewhere, because it's when it turns into like second unit photography and stunt drivers and stuff, I don't care. It's like, I'm seeing technique, but nothing about it is engaging me. But this I enjoyed probably just because it went so over the top with the amount of destruction in the movie.
Yeah.
Which
you could only get away with, by the way, in Rio. I mean, like, if it I was thinking about it, like, during the sequence too. I'm like, if this took place in an American city,
right?
You'd have like the military come in, or you'd have like right. the FBI or CIA or all these other right. things, and there's just kind of like a couple squad cars are chasing them through Rio, which is
right.
like,
they're all corrupt squad cars. And again,
right? There's one line where it's like, because
all these corrupt cops, they actually refer to them as corrupt cops.
But there was people like in the cop side too. It's like, everyone on your payroll is here.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Phew, we can not have to worry about the couple good eggs in this.
Right, but that's
department.
The kind of movie it is, and I think that's on purpose. I really do. Like, I think they're smart to know, like, okay, well, we want them to be corrupt cops, so we
I agree.
They figure out where to place it. I think at certain turns, again, the movie does a lot of things that are stupid. Where I'm just like, oh, guys, come on. Most of it involving Vin Diesel, but like when they get to the race sequence, when they're like, let's go get us a couple of cars. All right, let me go back to my point about the, remind me to go back to my point about the end sequence. At one point they need to steal a couple of cars because they need fast cars. And so they're like, all right, let's go get us some cars. And we're like, oh, let's get ready for the stupid racing sequence and all the girls and the skirts that barely cover their butts. And it's just like, is every hot girl in Brazil a fan of illegal street racing? Is that what we're meant to believe? But what I like is that Justin Lin is like, fuck that. And he cuts away from it. We don't even see the race. The thing that these movies have been built around, he's not even interested anymore. He cuts away from that and you don't see the race. The first time you actually see sort of a street race, it's between like four of the main characters, and they're racing for $1 million, like as a goof. They're racing cop cars for $1 million as a goof, and I like that that the movie sort of is playing with its own conventions, is giving us the scene that we've seen in four other movies, the racing scene, but with a different set of stakes, with characters that we know and like all of them, and obviously we know it's going to be one of these two guys who wins. And since we're in spoilers, what I can't forgive the movie, of course, is because it has to keep pointing out how awesome Vin Diesel is. It's like, he loses. Oh, but he let him win. Like, cause he would never really lose. He's that awesome.
Right. Like it's just,
he beats
choice,
up like... The Rock. Like, no, I'm seeing you two stand in front of, you know, side by side or whatever. Like, there's no chance you're beating up The Rock.
Right.
No one is beating up The Rock.
Do you think that sequence, when they go and, you know, they're supposed to be like, they have the charger and they're going to race for pinks, in the underground street sequence, or, you know, street racing, whatever. And they just, the next scene, like you said, it cuts to them arriving back in the warehouse with the Porsche that
right.
they had won. Do you think there was a scene that was shot for that? Or do you think it was just...
I kind of don't. Yeah. I feel like they shot some of the buildup just so they would have the shots of the girls in skirts to stick in the trailers.
Right.
Because I think a lot of people go to the movie for that. Not the girls, but like that whole scene, that whole vibe. They're on the street. They're going to race. Right. There's hot girls. There's like bass thumping. It's like, that's what they're there for. So I don't know how this – I mean, obviously it's playing. A lot of people are enjoying it, and it's making a boatload of money. But I think it's interesting that it may alienate some people who, like, love Tokyo Drift, come to this movie for
my
a
nephew.
Very specific thing and get something else. Whereas I think people who haven't necessarily liked the other four movies might get a lot more out of this movie, you know, because it's
right.
not really a racing movie. It's just this dumb action heist movie. When it gets to the end and they're swinging the vault around and just destroying insane amounts of cars again, you know, like it's the Blues Brothers and it's all practical. It's not CGI. I like that.
Well, the safe is all CGI.
Well, yeah. Okay. But I mean, when the cars are flipping and all that stuff.
Okay.
I liked all that. I find myself, I have this move. When something is like cool, I laugh because I'm just like, ah, like, that's, I've never seen that. That's cool. That's the way I express like I'm having fun. That's neat. And I did it a lot in this movie from the very first moment where he pulls the car in front of the bus and the bus just does this crazy flip, or when they drive the car into the moving train. I just found myself like kind of giggling, like, this is so silly, but it's so... I'm very entertained by it. Yeah.
Right. And that's even, and maybe that's my disconnect too. And again, I feel like I'm defending too much of what other people have written about it in my own opinion of it. Meaning like when I read Ebert's review and he's like, you know, of course it's stupid and silly, but just leave logic aside and just enjoy it for its own merits. But like when Paul Walker in the opening sequence, he is the car in front of the bus that slams on the brakes and the bus hits his car and the bus flips over. Right. And I'm like,
right. Of course it makes them right. Cause but the bus would just like, steamroll the car.
It's just the joke that the Onion did this past week where it says, you know, their Onion TV show interviews the 5-year-old who wrote Fast Five. And it's like, So the car goes through the hole in the train and blah, blah, blah. It's like, of course, it's like, let's not think about this too much where the car that Paul Walker's driving flips over a bus. And again, I'm like, as soon as the scene's over, I move on. But it's like whenever it almost felt like a lot of the scenes is kind of like, we're like, ah, fuck it. Who cares? Let's just move on to the next thing. And to a certain point, I like that because I really do enjoy kind of the mindless stuff. And I mentioned before, like I watch a lot of bad movies on purpose because they're easy to watch. They're easy to enjoy. It's a lot harder than sitting down and having to like really focus on some things. And this movie definitely fits that category. I probably will watch this time and time again. And I'll watch this more than I would watch a Fast and Furious. Although I've seen that probably 2 or 3 times just because it's on HBO all the time. Because again, it's so easy to watch. But I still like the first one for you know, many more reasons. I think the effects are a lot better and things like that. And this movie, it's like, well, they got to go bigger. They have to go, you know, like the safe. And again, I hadn't seen that before, but I don't know why I'm seeing it, I guess, is the point too. Like, I haven't seen this before, but is it just because like, well, fuck it, let's just do it. Let's just steal the safe and that'll be the big climax and we'll go on the bridge. And for whatever reason, like, and again, not like to let logic creep in here, but I don't know like when Vin Diesel released a cable, but he released Paul Walker's cable. And then
I don't know how he has that control. So let's talk about that for a second because it's a heist movie, obviously, you're not always seeing exactly what you think you're seeing. And I definitely figured out what was going on before the reveal, but I mean, not necessarily way before the reveal because my mind wasn't going there. But I liked that at one point, it turns out that dragging the safe through the city was always the plan. But I liked that at one point when it was like, okay, we're screwed. We're never going to be able to pull this off because they had spent the whole movie doing this very like, they're all training and they're trying to get around security cameras. And like all of these montages of like, how are we going to pull this off? And then at a certain point, it's just like, well, no, fuck it. Let's strap cables to the vault, pull it through a wall and drag it through the city. I like that it was just like, let's abandon our plan and go for crazy destruction.
And it was interesting, too, that they really did devote like, you know, 10, 15 minutes to like a video. They installed a video camera and had a track in their warehouse. And each person was we need a better car, a faster car. And every person tried and the camera caught you. And I liked it. I liked that.
Yeah. And then they just abandon that and go for crazy wanton destruction. But when it gets to the sequence where Vin Diesel detaches the car and says, like, it was always the plan, I was just like, wait, no, that's horseshit. Because at this point, you think he's still dragging the vault with $10 million. And he's about to give himself up, which means he'll give up the vault of $10 million. Why was that always the plan? You brought these people here from all over the world, and now you're just going to give their money away? That was always the plan? And of course, it turns out that's not always the plan. They had something else going on. The movie is definitely, like you said, written by a 5-year-old, but like it was written by, not 5, but maybe 10. It's written by me at 10 years old, just like if I'm playing with G.I. Joes, it's like all the stuff I would want to see happen. Like, yeah, of course. The Rock is like a worthy adversary. I'm sorry, Dwayne Johnson is a worthy adversary for most of the movie. But like, of course, at some point we want to see him work together with the team. And so the movie, of course, gives you that. And just like,
do you think the movie earned it, though, when he's like when at the point where
no sense where he's like, I'll help you guys, but only until you catch this guy. Like that's completely flies in the face of everything we've been told about your character. But wish fulfillment wise, you're like, I want to see them work together. And then they do. And like the scene where they're pinned down by machine gun fire. And then all of a sudden, like Paul Walker jumps out with a machine gun and saves them. It's like, that makes no sense. And Paul Walker's not a badass, but it's like, it made me happy to see it. I was like, yes, woohoo.
It is funny. You know, I want to go back to Lost for 2 seconds. I was always kind of annoyed in Lost when not the first. Well, you know what? This is Lost and the Fast and Furious franchise has a lot of things in common. No, because I'll even, you know, it sounds so dumb maybe to you. I know we've talked about this before, but the first season of Lost was awesome, was so great and so fun and so unique and original. Obviously, the same cannot be said of the first movie in Fast and Furious franchise.
Right.
But the first season of Lost was great. And the reason it was so great was because, or one of the reasons it was so great, there's a lot of reasons why it was so great, but one of the reasons it was so great was because it was a very simple, basic, straightforward story. But a lot of the story was like unknown, crazy bullshit. You know, it's like we like all the characters. We like John Locke. We like Jack. We like all these people. And then, of course, you've got subsequent seasons in which they have to keep this crazy pace and this, you know, kind of keep introducing things that are new. And long story short, by the end of the whole series, it's like I checked out. I tuned out. I didn't care about the Mr. White or Mr. Black or whatever their names were. And I know that, like, obviously this comparison is flawed in many respects, but in the ways that the Lost franchise, I think, kind of plays into this is because you get to a point, and I've said this a couple times, but I think with the Lost, you know, the Lost comparison now, it makes maybe a little more sense. Maybe not, probably not. I'm not very smart. But you know, you've got to keep adding stuff to the mixture to make it interesting and relevant and blah, blah, blah. And at this point, maybe I did kind of just check out, but I still enjoyed it because I still have affection for the franchise and the characters, I guess, you know. And I forgot my other point. What was my other point about how Michelle Rodriguez was in Lost too? Let's talk about Lost some more.
You know, I'm not a big subscriber to this idea of like, it's a summer movie and so we should lower our expectations and all that nonsense. But like, there are obviously certain kinds of movies that come out in the summer, and some of them are good and some of them are bad. And this is certainly the kind of movie that comes out in the summer usually. And I think as one of those movies goes, judging by the criteria by which you typically judge a quote-unquote summer movie, I think this one really works. I could see myself watching it a bunch more times. I had fun. It was a very entertaining action movie, very big, very silly, but like not done without humor, which I thought was really missing from the fourth movie, and even to some extent the first movie. I like the first movie partially because it is sort of like goofy but sincere at the same time, you know what I mean? Right. Like, it's such a goofy Point Break does the same thing. It's like this ridiculous premise, but they treat it very seriously, and this movie like knows that it's ridiculous and doesn't try and take it seriously. Not that they're making fun of it, but like, again, you felt differently, but I really felt like, with the exception of Vin Diesel, everybody on screen seemed to be having a really good time. More especially Justin Lin, like, he really seemed to be having fun orchestrating all this craziness.
Maybe it's I'm still pissed off at Paul Walker because he starred in Meet the Deedles,
sure,
a movie that was casting in Chicago, and I decided not to go audition for it.
He
so
pulled the rug
I,
out from under
I,
you, and that's
I could
not
have
cool.
been. Actually, I'm such a dork. I would have been the other dorky guy in Meet the Deedles, who I don't think has done anything since Meet the Deedles, or if he has, it's not gone on to the heights that Paul Walker has achieved.
I mean, Paul Walker is like a movie star. How did this happen?
I didn't dislike it. And again, my whole point is just to say, like, I don't know why this movie gets a pass or why this movie is so beloved, because I still like it, but I still like all those kinds of movies because I'm, I guess, dumber than most. But I will say that I'm always surprised when I'm on the expressway after a movie like this at how fast my car goes.
I was thinking about that as I left the theater last night. Like, do you think cops kind of bum out every time? Like, opening weekend for one of these movies, they're just like, oh, every asshole is going to be driving around like crazy. Because the theater that I went to, and it's the same one I think you saw it at, the theater that's closest to my house that I see most of my movies at, is this, it's like on its own compound almost, and it's huge. It's like
it's an airport.
There's nothing around it. Yeah, it's like an airport, and the parking lot is like the size of like the parking lot for a shopping mall. It's gigantic. And in the furthest corner of this parking lot, which was like not a close walk to the theater, you're talking about a couple minutes to get from where they were parked to the theater, was like, I don't know, 40 like little souped up like Hondas. Like, they all called each other and were like, let's go see this movie together. I mean, it was like a fleet of these racing
cars.
And you just have to know that, I mean, cops drive by and they're like, oh, there's going to be trouble tonight.
Right. When did you see it? What time did you see it at?
Like 6, I think.
Okay. I saw it, like around 5 o'clock on a Friday. And actually, the theater I saw it in, and granted, it was on, I think, 3 different projections, digital, regular, and 3D, or not IMAX, 3D, IMAX. Yeah. I saw it in digital. I don't know. It just was the time I saw it at. And it was not that full. I was kind of surprised.
Yeah.
It was fairly, it was in a
theater. I think the later it gets, the more crowded
that
movie specifically will get. It was interesting looking around because it really felt like, as I surveyed the audience, it really seemed like there were a lot of people there that maybe don't go to the movies that much, but like they are coming out to see the new Fast and Furious movie. And I'm interested to see where it goes from here because, again, I think this was my favorite of all of them.
Spoiler talk, you're going to talk about how the Tokyo Drift plays into
it. It doesn't necessarily play into it, but like Han's last line in the movie is very much a reference to like what's coming, which already happened in Tokyo Drift. She says they're going to go to Germany or Italy, and she says, oh, I thought you wanted to go to Tokyo. And he says, don't worry, we'll get there. Because we all know that once we get there, Han is going to die. And I wish they would just come up with some way to be like, no, Han jumped out of the car and he's not dead. And we don't have to like, because this is my own stupid.
Because you love Han.
I do love Han. And this is my own stupid weird thing. Like, spoilers for the Bourne Identity movies coming up. In the first like 10 or 15 minutes of the Bourne Supremacy, they kill off.
I don't even know which one that is.
That's the second one. They kill off Franco Potente. And it ruins the first movie for me because now I sit there and I watch, and it's like everything you're going through, everything that you struggle to achieve and that you eventually succeed at is for nothing because you're going to die 15 minutes into the next movie. And I feel the same way. I want to love Han. I want to be so excited. But in the back of my head, I'm just like, oh, but it doesn't end well for you. You die lamely in a street race.
Right. Because if it wasn't a movie, it's like, well, just wait 15 more. If you're watching it was a longer movie, it's like, well, she dies at the end of a make-believe movie instead of like the beginning of the next movie.
So I get that they have to reference that, like, yeah, we know it's coming. But like, and I don't know if they're ever going to do that where they like catch up to that point. I don't know. I would almost prefer that they not. But now you stayed like through enough of the credits to see the tag at the end, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Which, to your point about Han, like, I wish they find some way to make Han jump out of the car and survive.
Yeah.
If any franchise would do it, it's this one because the tag at the end of this movie is
But again, at least they're sort of playing fair because, as I had said, Letty is killed off in the first few minutes of the fourth movie, Fast and Furious, which I thought was super lame too. But it happens off camera, and like Vin Diesel hears about it over the phone. It's just like, hey, way to stage that dramatically, guys.
Do you think that was designed knowing that
in
the sixth movie? You just think it was like bad?
I think it was like Michelle Rodriguez is shooting Avatar, and we have her for 2 days. And so she can't be a part of this movie, but we want to have the whole old cast. That's how we're selling this movie. So we need to have everybody. And so they sort of built the movie around her not being in it, basically. But now it's a huge hit, and now she's like, hey, guys, I died in Avatar. I'm free.
She's promoting, like, Avatar 2 as if she's still alive. Like, she's talking about it's underwater and crap like that. It's like, Michelle.
Well, what else does she have going on?
You're dead.
Fast and Furious 6, apparently, because now the tag is that, no, she's alive, actually. And I liked, again, because I'm a sucker for this stupid continuity, even if it's like characters and franchises that I don't even love. I liked, you know, I ended up eventually like liking the Saw movies, not because they were good or that I liked any of the characters. There's a whole podcast on it. You would know this if you listened to it.
I assume you're talking to the audience and not me. Correct.
I'm talking to you. I warm to it because there's this crazy continuity. It's like, I don't care about any of these characters. I don't even like them as human beings, but I like the fact that movie after movie, they're just building on to what came before, and it turns into like this crazy, bloody soap opera. And this movie is starting to do the same thing because in the tag, they bring back Eva Mendes from Too Fast, Too Furious. And you just.
From Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
Exactly. And it's like, I like it that they're acknowledging these movies that came before and building this little world. I shouldn't. It's an easy thing to do, but for some reason, it totally works for me. And so when she comes out, I'm like, hey, neat. And then she has a picture of Michelle Rodriguez. So we know there's going to be a Fast 6. They've already talked about it. And I think the screenwriter, Chris Morgan, has already talked, or maybe it was a producer. Somebody has already talked about we're moving away from street racing and into more of like heist movies. And that's fine. I like that more than racing. But
either way is fine. I mean, just, you know, it's they both, you know, are serviceable, I think.
And again,
I think it would alienate some of their audience, though.
Well, definitely. And I will obviously wait to pass judgment until I see it. The thing's not even written or shot or anything. But like in my head right now, it can't work because I have a feeling Justin Lin's not going to be a part of it. He's already done 3. And I think this movie, more than anything before, is really his calling card. Like, I can handle something big and expensive. I think he's going to be handed some big action movie. And I
that was a big success. Yeah. Like that obviously made a lot of money and people were critically like Justin Lin.
He comes off this movie better than anybody else. I think, you know, everybody is saying he's the guy that made this work. So
the
sixth one does
have the same writer though, too. I think his name's Chris Morgan or something. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's where the movie really is, you know, the foundation of
He also wrote Tokyo Drift and Fast and Furious. So again, I don't know. So I don't think Justin Lin's going to be a part of it. And I just have a feeling since we've already seen them do the heist movie and we've already had the whole, like, the gang's back together, they can't repeat those beats. I mean, and I'm not saying, like, they should have ended the franchise with Fast Five. But, like, if they did, that's fine because it was the biggest one. It was the best one. It sort of ends with everybody in a place that, like, okay, minus that little Michelle Rodriguez tag, you know, it ends with everybody in a fine place. So I worry about what they're going to try and do for six, but that's obviously super premature, and maybe it'll be great. I don't know, but I'll totally see it.
And you worrying about six is really just you being like, I wonder what they're going to do.
Yeah, right. At the end of this podcast, I'm like, I can't imagine it's going to be good, but I would have said the same thing about Fast Five if you told me about it. Like, why do we need another one of those?
But in Fast Five's defense of even watching, like you said, watching the trailer, it just is like, if nothing else, they just have to acknowledge, like, if we're lucky to get the fifth movie, let's just have a lot of fun with it, which is probably, which is definitely where they went with it.
And what they're doing, I think they figured out how to do well, you know? I think each movie has sort of stumbled in different ways, some more than others. And I think this movie kind of finally figured out, like, oh, here's how to do this really well and make a really entertaining, really crowd-pleasing movie that I don't, while it doesn't stand up to any scrutiny, as we had said, like if you think about anything, it's it doesn't work. But I also don't feel like at any point it was insulting my intelligence.
No.
The way that like a Transformers insults my intelligence at every stage. You know what I mean?
You may lose your faith in us, but never in yourself.
Optimus!
Cut to Transformers, this Revenge of the Fallen. Optimus! Cut to Transformers 1. The same fucking, whatever.
Cut to Transformers the movie. Open, damn it, open! Alright, that's my... and who knows, maybe later this summer we'll see Dark of the Moon. We'll be like, they finally got that right too. I don't know.
I don't know. Michael Bay's track record is everything. It tells us not.
Right.
I was so excited about Pearl Harbor. Listen to the Pearl Harbor podcast, by the way.
At this point, we're just referencing old podcasts.
Yeah, it's like, I don't even need to say it. You just need to listen to it.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm not going to waste my breath.
You want to hear what I think about the Saw movies? Please. I spent an hour talking about it. I watched six Saw movies for that thing.
Who was the... It was Mike, right?
Yeah.
The co-star. Yeah.
And we both like were like, no, I think there's something there worth seeing. And then we went to see the... Right after we told people, like, maybe you want to give the Saw movies a chance. The last one came out, the final chapter. And it was like the worst thing you've ever seen. And it felt like... it's the worst when you like go on the record and like kind of stand up for something and then they stab you in the back by sucking.
You were that way about Sons of Anarchy too, right?
Yeah. I wrote a review for DVD Verdict about Sons of Anarchy, like season two. It's like, it's a good show. You should really be watching it. And then season three comes out. It's just like, this is a nightmare. Why did I tell people to watch this? But everyone should see Fast Five.
Yeah, see
this week, because then Thor comes out and you got to see Thor.
You know what's funny is that the Thor is the start of summer. I think Fast Five is definitely the start of the summer. I mean, it's April, which is crazy to think that movies.
See, and I didn't before I saw the movie. I was like, no, Fast Five is trying to squeeze in like before summer starts, like to like a warm up almost. But after seeing it, that is 100% like, no, summer has started because that movie played and that movie worked, and that is the exact kind of movie you want to see during the summer months. And I think it's definitely the start of summer, which means next year, you know. It's going to be Easter, basically.
Right.
Summer will start.
And I can't imagine Thor. I mean, we'll see it, and I hope for the best. And I'm not a big comic book reader, but I can't imagine that. It just doesn't look that interesting to me. Although a little Thor Fast Five connection is that Elsa Pataky, the good cop, is married to Chris Hemsworth.
Get
or
out of town.
Yeah.
Chris Hemsworth was in A Perfect Getaway starring Keely Sanchez.
Wow.
Boom.
It all comes back to us.
Knowledge. Fast Five. thank you guys very much for listening. Our website, once again, fthismovie.blogspot.com. Our email, fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to email your thoughts on Fast Five or the Fast and Furious movies as a whole. You can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Douglas, please take us out on a Vin Diesel impression.
You're not in America. You're in Brazil.